Kobani, a city in northern Syria, which has become a symbol of resistance for many. Kobani is a city that nearly collapsed in 2014, but then the so-called Islamic State suffered its first major defeat there. Now Kobani is threatened again. But this time, the danger does not come from the Islamic State, but from Turkey and its Islamist allies. The Turkish army is conducting airstrikes in the region, attacks, civilians are dying, the so-called Syrian National Army is attacking on the ground. One who experiences this daily is Talal Sadun, who grew up in Kobani.
We protected Europe, and now it's Europe's turn to help us. Countries like Canada, Germany, the US, and France must protect us.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Welcome to In Crisis Mode. My name is Jan Jessen. I am a war and crisis reporter for the Funke Media Group. For this episode, I have been traveling in Syria, specifically in the north of the country, more precisely in Kobani, and I am talking to the people here about an escalation in the country, which began even before the fall of Assad in December and is still continuing now. And I meet survivors who have already risked their lives for this city once and may have to do so again. We ask ourselves, will Kobani hold out, or is a new disaster looming? Perhaps it must be explained that Kobani, as I mentioned at the beginning, is a city that has become a symbol of resistance against the so-called Islamic State, the IS, like few others. This terrorist organization had taken control of large parts of Iraq and Syria in 2014 and 15, a region the size of Great Britain, and established its terror caliphate there, has committed atrocities, has committed genocide against the Yazidis, and has been responsible for many, many crimes. And one of the fiercest opponents in the fight against the so-called Islamic State were the Kurds in the north of the country, in the north of Syria. They fiercely defended themselves against IS and became one of the closest partners of the West, the anti-IS coalition. They significantly contributed to the defeat of the terror caliphate in the year 2019. And Kobani was such a focal point. Kobani, that is a city directly on the Turkish border, and the Islamic State tried to capture this city in 2014-15. That was around the turn of the year. 2014-15. The IS tried to capture it, and indeed they managed to conquer large parts of the city. I remember back then I was on the phone with one of the Kurdish commanders who was still in the city, and she told me that they were only in one neighborhood somehow and defending, but somehow seeing no chance to continue defending the city, that the superiority of IS is gigantic, and they are basically just there to take as many of these IS people with them to death. She also told me back then, which I found extreme, that they kept the last bullet for themselves, especially the women, because the women, terrible things would have happened to them if they had fallen alive into the hands of ISIS. Perhaps a side note, the ISIS fighters hate fighting against women, even today, because they believe that if they are killed by a woman, they will not go to paradise. So in that respect, that was quite an intense conversation, I must say, back then when I spoke with this woman. But then a little miracle happened. For one thing, suddenly Kurdish women and men from other countries like Turkey, Iraq, but also from even Iran, joined this resistance and have together defended Kobani with the Syrian Kurds. And that was crucial. The Americans intervened, or rather the American-led anti-IS coalition. They then carried out airstrikes on IS, which at that time was still armed with tanks, heavy artillery, and other things they had previously captured during the conquest of Mosul in Iraq. And yes, the Americans ensured through their airstrikes that Kobani could be held. Not only that, but that the Islamic State suffered its first heavy defeat there. That means the aura of invincibility of the Islamic State ended with Kobani. Well, and now the following is happening. From Kobani, it goes directly to the Turkish border. When you are in Kobani, you can see on the other side huge Turkish flags that have been planted there somewhat menacingly as a warning. And Turkey has always opposed the development of self-administration structures beyond its border, Kurdish-dominated self-administration structures, because Turkey believes that those who now have a say in northern Syria are connected with the Banned Workers Party, PKK. In fact, they are ideologically close, but there are no organizational connections, at least none that I am aware of. And nevertheless, Turkey has been trying for years to dismantle these self-administration structures. Turkey has conducted several major military operations in 2016, 2018, and 2019 in the region, and has occupied parts of northern Syria with the help of Islamist militias. These are basically, yes, they can be described as mercenaries. And this is the Syrian National Army, the so-called. And they fight on the side of Turkey. And these areas, which were occupied by Turkey in 2018 and 2019, are located west and east of Kobani. And when, in November, the so-called Hayat Hari al-Sham people, and also a larger militia that had a dominion in northwestern Syria, in Idlib, when they advanced and conducted their so-called blitzkrieg against the Assad regime in parallel to this advance, this Syrian National Army also advanced, but not on the areas controlled by the regime, rather on the self-administration structures. And these battles are still ongoing, which is something relatively underreported. But currently there is fighting at the Euphrates, and the attempt by the Syrian National Army, together with and supported by Turkish airstrikes, is simply to cross the Euphrates to encircle Kobani. So to advance from the western occupied areas of Syria to the areas occupied east of Kobani. That means, if that succeeds, Kobani would be encircled, cut off from supplies, and that is precisely the current plan. The opponents on the other side are the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF. These are the Kurdish-dominated groups that are now trying to defend themselves against this onslaught somehow. Jalal Muster, who lives in Kobani, I met him in a still completely destroyed neighborhood of Kobani, which is also right on the Turkish border. Kobani has, in recent years, that is after IS was driven out, Kobani has actually been largely rebuilt. You can still see scars of this fierce battle of the fight for Kobani 2014-15 everywhere, but large parts of the city are rebuilt. Kobani is not a really beautiful city, to be honest. It's a very gray city. Exhaust fumes waft through the air. So that is, yes, there are mostly two-story buildings. It does not look particularly nice, but as mentioned, it has been rebuilt. Only this one neighborhood where I met Jalal Muster has not been rebuilt. They have deliberately left it like that to, well, simply remind people of what happened there 10 years ago. And there you can see the incredible violence of the confrontation. Back then, in the fight against ISIS, many buildings are completely destroyed. And at the same time, also old war material, for example, these so-called Mad Max vehicles of the IS. Those were vehicles that the IS had prepared with armor plates so that they were protected against bazookas and machine gun fire, and with which they then sent off suicide bombers. They had converted these vehicles into rolling bombs, drove into the Kurdish positions. And you can still see all of that there. And Jalal Muster is an older gentleman who has made it his mission to conduct tours in this neighborhood and also to tell what happened back then, but also to show what happened in Kobani at that time. And he told me that for weeks he has experienced daily how bombs fall on his neighbors in the area. The people, he says, are desperate here because they say the world is watching and doing nothing.
Planes are constantly flying over us and mowing us down. We have 7 to 8 deaths per day. These bombings do not target the military, but civilians. The bombings are indiscriminate. He bombs indiscriminately and does not care whether they are children or not. He bombs and kills them.
That was something that was also heard in conversations with SDF people, also with many other people I spoke with in the north. On the one hand, they said it's somehow astonishing that no one really seems to care. Everyone is looking to Damascus. See, what is this transitional government doing there? But no one is looking at Kobani, no one is looking at northern Syria and commenting on what's happening there or even criticizing Turkey. This is something that really irritates people to a high degree, especially since, as I said, these fights at the Euphrates are apparently quite intense. So I also spoke with an SDF commander, or rather a spokesperson, press officer of the SDF, who said there are entire areas, for example, at the Tishrin Dam, which is a dam plant where basically Turkish drones are constantly attacking. Turkish fighter jets A attack, where the SDF fighters have to hide in tunnel systems because so much bomb material is being dropped on them. And that, as mentioned, happens there every day, still, even at the time of recording this podcast. Even though this has somewhat decreased in the past few days, it must also be said. But these fights continue with the declared goal of breaking through across the Euphrates. And then, as mentioned, towards those areas that Turkey has occupied east of Kobani. And yes, what could possibly happen in Kobani? Youssef experienced that. And I met Youssef very close to Kobani in an industrial area, I would say. It was like a conglomerate of many workshops and shop premises. These are like container-type stories, where, as I said, car repair shops or whatever were actually located. They are all empty now and refugees are in there. There were dozens of families. And these families come from Manwich. Manwich, that is a city which a few months ago was captured by those SNA people. It is located south of Kobani, southwest to be exact. And Manbij was once a city that was also ruled, controlled by the Islamic State. It was once considered the London of the Middle East, because in Manbij for some time, largely, English was spoken because so many foreign ICE fighters landed there. That was the first hub through which they were then distributed, further to Raqqa or to Mosul or to other cities. And Manbij was recaptured in 2016, 2017 by the Syrian Democratic Forces. They paid an incredible toll in blood there. So there were a lot of deaths during the capture of Manbij. And well, this city was then, just a few weeks ago, taken by our NATO partner or the troops supporting them, that is this Syrian National Army. And the people we met there, near Kobani, in this industrial area, they were already quite desperate, I must say. So he said, a return for him to Manbij was not possible, it was far too dangerous.
We have no plans to return. The people who fled are forced to stay here because they have nowhere else to go. No one can return to their cities, neither to Manbij nor to Afrin. As long as these forces are there, no one can go back because there is no security.
Youssef, he told me that during the defense of Manbij or the battles for Manbij, over 700 fighters of the Syrian Democratic Forces were killed and 30 civilians were killed. And one must not, yes, forget. So these, I already mentioned at the beginning, this Syrian National Army, they are basically mercenaries. And they proceed accordingly aggressively. They were also in Afrin in 2018. Well, throughout the entire outer northwest. They have established a more or less terror regime in Syria. There are very, very many reports of looting, kidnappings, rapes, executions, murders, and all this and similar things are said to have happened also in Manbij. That is what Youssef said, and that's what the others I met in the industrial area said, that they have heard and seen videos of such atrocities. And now many fear that Kobani could become the next Manbij. Youssef has therefore made an appeal to Germany and to the European Union.
The first thing we want from the German government and the EU is for the Turkish state's attack on Rojava to stop, on Syria in general and Rojava in particular. The second thing is that they help these people. Germany is a big country and has helped many people before, but the most important thing for us is that they stop Turkey's attack on us.
Yes, the attacks have, of course, changed life in the Rojava region. This is nothing new. Rojava is the name for these Kurdish-dominated areas in northern Syria. As mentioned, these are mainly populated by Kurds, but also Christians and others. Various Arab tribes, they are all now united under this umbrella of the Syrian Democratic Forces. And as I said, in 2016, 2018, 2019, there were already attacks by Turkey. And also, in the past years, there have been, at least occasionally, airstrikes and smaller attacks. But right now, the current attacks are really driving people to despair. So before Manbij was attacked, for example, there was also a small Kurdish enclave, which was located north of Aleppo. And it was 4 years since 2018, still controlled by the Syrian Democratic Forces. And in this small enclave, many people stayed, over 100,000. 3,000 refugees who had fled from Afrin in 2018 were living there under precarious conditions, but at least in some safety. At least no bombs fell there. That changed last November during this advance. The Syrian National Army and the intensified Turkish airstrikes. So first the enclave fell, then Manbij fell, and as I said, now the current fighting in the Euphrates region, and of course the people are afraid. The children suffer, as always, the most in such conflicts. And of course, they are also very afraid of the bombs falling there. I met Talal Sadun, who was mentioned at the beginning of this episode, at the Arin Mirkan roundabout. In Kobani, this roundabout is named after a young woman, Arin Mirkan, who was involved in the defense battles in Kobani. And Arin Mirkan became famous because she was a commander of such a small platoon, about 12 female fighters whom she commanded. And when they were in a hopeless situation, she then ordered her comrades to retreat. She covered the retreat, and then when it was clear her comrades were out and safe, she detonated hand grenades. When the IS people got into her position, she detonated hand grenades so as not to fall into their hands alive and reportedly took down 10 IS fighters. Whether that's true, I don't know exactly, but that's what's been reported. Took another 10 IS fighters with her to death, and she sacrificed herself to stop the IS terrorists. Kalal Sadun, an older guy with a huge mustache, had a red scarf, a red and white scarf wrapped around his head, wore Kurdish clothing, and was sitting there relatively relaxed on a plastic chair. But then, when I started talking to him, he quickly got worked up and very clearly stated why he believes that Europe is now finally being called upon.
We saved Europe. We lost 12,000 fallen and 24,000 wounded. We protected Europe and defeated the armed fighters. Today, Erdogan is training thousands of fighters in California, Belgium, Afghanistan and Pakistan. He was in Libya, Azerbaijan and Karabakh. He's basically saying, I will take control of all countries, I have terrorist fighters, and I will send them to different countries.
Yes, the people here know they can only defend themselves at present. I was in Kobani too, and that touched me very much, to see a so-called martyr cemetery. So martyr is always a slightly strange term for us, but it is a common word. Not just for people from the Islamist context who fall, but for everyone who dies in battles. And in Kobani, there is a large martyr cemetery. There lie tens of thousands of people who fell in the battles against ISIS. Also, Talal just said that they have had at least 12,000 fallen in the north. And alone in Kobani at the cemetery, there are thousands. And it is quite bitter to see. They have these graves. And on the tombstones are always the pictures of those who fell. And among them are very young people, who may be 15, 16, 17 years old. That is, of course, bitter to see. And these are all people who fell in the fight against an enemy that also threatened us in Europe. So you surely remember the attacks in Paris, or the rampage in Berlin, or last year's attack in Solingen. These are all things that have been inspired or even orchestrated by IS. That means the Kurdish men and women who died there and now lie in this cemetery in Kobani, also defended Europe's security. And they have been repeatedly told this. By the way, this also applies to the Iraqi Kurds on the part of European and German politics. And they were repeatedly told that one is proud of them, that one greatly appreciates what they do, that they are sacrificing their young people in the fight against the Islamic State. And in the end, one must say, we abandon the Kurds. And that is simply bitter to see. And on this cemetery, there are, and this touched me deeply, now also new burial fields. And these new grave fields, there, as we were just there, a young woman was lying over one of these graves and was really distraught, screaming, crying, sobbing, and her friend was trying to comfort her. We didn't speak with her because it was clear that the woman was not in a position to tell us what had happened to her. But it was quite obvious that she there just lost a dear person. And, well, yes, it makes you a bit, how should I say, angry. So this silence of the Europeans, the Western world, Germany, about what is happening there. But there is still hope for international support. Talal, Youssef and Jalal essentially say the same thing.
My plea to the German government is to help us in some way and stop these attacks. Warplanes are constantly flying over us, bombing us. What have we done to deserve such attacks on civilians? We are running from one corner to another, trying to escape the airstrikes.
Yes, so it's not about saying send troops to protect us, defend us. We don't need that. We can do it ourselves. What needs to be stopped are the Turkish airstrikes, because that's something our people can't do anything about. I have said that the Syrian Democratic Forces are currently in the tunnel system. They come out now and then. And by the way, they are now using so-called FPV drones, these first-person view drones that are being used in large numbers in Ukraine. So they have learned a bit from what the Ukrainians are doing in their defensive fight against the Russian armed forces. But as I said, against the air attacks, against the drone attacks, they cannot defend themselves. That's why this urgent plea. Ensure that Turkey finally stops bombing us. There are also repeated calls for a no-fly zone, similar to the one in northern Iraq in 1991, which helped the Kurds defend themselves against Saddam Hussein. And you might also be asking yourselves why the Turks are not directly attacking Kobani. So it has happened occasionally that airstrikes were conducted there. But there is no direct ground offensive on the city now, and this might be related to the presence of the Americans in the region. I did say the Syrian Democratic Forces were and are the closest partner in Syria when it comes to the fight against ISIS. There are also images of American special forces on the ground, who sometimes have the patches of the Syrian Democratic Forces on their jackets, but this is a very, very, very small group that the Americans have deployed there. They are now mainly concerned with securing the Syrian oil fields, which are in the far east of the country. However, they occasionally also patrol in the Kobani region. And that is possibly one of the reasons why no direct attacks are being launched on Kobani, because just that the Turks possibly, yes, have the fear that they could then anger the Americans, along with their somewhat erratic president. In this regard, as mentioned, there are currently no direct attacks on the city itself. But indeed, in the region, as mentioned, with the aim of closing a siege around Kobani and eventually starving the city, would ultimately have the same effect. Kobani would, in the worst case, fall. Yes, so I think Germany should become significantly more active there. I mean, Turkey is not a terrorist organization like ISIS. It's still a NATO partner, so someone who also relies on the other allies. Turkey is a close trading partner of Germany, and I would expect from my government, from our government, we would wish that it makes it very clear that what is happening there cannot be in the interest of the German government. As mentioned, the Syrian Democratic Forces have sacrificed many, many people. The Kurds have sacrificed many people in the fight against ISIS to make Europe a bit safer as well. And I think we not only owe them gratitude, but also support. People simply need protection. And I also think that even if we put aside loyalty, gratitude, and so on, I also believe it's very, very wise to protect the Kurds and the self-administrative structures in a new Syria, also out of self-interest. Because, as I said, they are fighting against ISIS. ISIS is still active in the region. That means there are still 10,000 terrorist fighters who are at large. The Kurds also guard very, very many captured IS people and relatives of IS fighters. If all that collapses, we will certainly have a huge problem in Europe and in Germany. That was it for this episode in Crisis Mode. The podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister. He is also a journalist at the Radio and Media Group, and you can find our podcast everywhere where there are podcasts. You can, of course, subscribe to us there as well. That would be very helpful and would make us happy. Feel free to follow us and write to us at krisenmodus@funkymedien.de if you have questions, suggestions, or other things. And you can also write to me personally on Facebook. Yes, feel free to recommend us as well if this podcast has helped you. And if you believe that it could also help other people, we'd be happy about that too. I'm saying goodbye for today. Thank you. Take care. See you soon. Bye-bye.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.